Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
After I whip his, you know what, in this debate, we're going to be going out 24/7.
That, of course, is Senator John McCain anticipating tonight's debate with his opponent, Senator Barack Obama, for the White House. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about the presidential election and tonight's debate with Dr. Jeff Walls in just a moment. Before we introduce our next guest, a special thanks to two listeners, Jim and Dan in Minnesota, for donating more than 100 bushels of soybeans. Believe it or not, yes, more than 100 bushels of soybeans to Issues Etc. to help support this worldwide outreach. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Dan in Minnesota. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support. Dr. Jeff Walls is Associate Professor of Political Science at Concordia University, Wisconsin, and co-author of the book Lutheran Pastors and Politics, Issues in the Public Square. Dr. Walls, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd. Good to be back.
Is this presidential debate, is the presidential race itself over?
It's looking that way in some senses. Certainly, Obama's held a pretty steady lead here. Historically, generally when a candidate has a lead like this at this stage in the race, it's difficult for the person chasing to catch up. We did see in 1980, we saw Carter and Reagan in 1980. Reagan did come back from a pretty significant hole there to edge Carter in 1980. A difference then was much of this movement came fairly late in the game, late October, after the only debate in which Carter and Reagan engaged, and Reagan kind of put to rest some concerns voters had about him. There was also a fairly weak economy, and Carter, as the incumbent, was blamed for that. So you certainly have that as a precedent. It's going to be difficult for McCain. Certainly this has been a topsy-turvy election. Polls have moved here and there. But I think it will take, an extraordinary performance by McCain tonight, some kind of a misstep by Obama or some other kind of event to really shake, I think, the trend lines in this election.
Well, in that vein, what do you think Senator McCain would need to do tonight to, if possible, tighten up this race in the short amount of time he has left?
Yeah, I think he needs to try and be a little more the John McCain, the more authentic John McCain we saw 4, 5, 6 years ago. And that was a John McCain, at least to me, that was truly a straight talker. You may recall his 2000 campaign for the White House for the nomination. He did have something called the Straight Talk Express. He was always known as one to kind of, again, be straight and to be truthful. And, I think he helps himself tonight by just being as candorous and honest and forthright and yet as upbeat as possible, which is difficult given the situation he's in and clearly given the tough economic times. I think it's going to take that. And, it may take even something more dramatic, perhaps, and this has been mentioned, I don't think it'll happen, but perhaps some kind of a promise to serve only one term or something along those lines, something that will jolt the voters, if it can be done, away from this economic malaise, away from the stock market, which I think went down pretty significantly again today. So he has to be sharp, he has to be good, and I think he has to come up with something that's very unexpected that demonstrates his leadership.
I'm wondering about how the economy, in really a rather rapid fashion, took over the presidential race. I think 2 months ago, maybe even a month and a half ago, if you would ask the brightest and the best what the biggest issue going in, they might have put the economy first, but they probably would have put foreign policy and the war effort ahead of that. And yet no one's talking about that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately for McCain, he's tried to distance himself, of course, from President Bush on some of these issues, but people associate, fair or not, associate McCain with Bush, in part because they are of the same party, and this is the incumbent party, and oftentimes it's the incumbent party, presidentially especially, that is blamed for any kind of economic downturn, which, you know, you would think we might also pin some of the blame, fairly or not, on the Congress, which is a Democratic Congress, and whose approval is around 9 or 10 or 8% versus President Bush's, what, 26, 25% approval. But again, historically and contemporarily, people do tend to hold the president responsible for the state of the economy, and they've seen the economy, of course, worsen in a number of different ways, and they hold Bush responsible for that, and by virtue, they're punishing McCain as a Republican as well.
Folks, I want to hear from you on the presidential race. What do you want to hear from the candidates tonight as they debate for the last time before the election? Our phone number, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MYIE, or email us, talkback@issuesetc.org. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, October the 15th. I'm wondering about the debates as well. So far, the ones that I have watched, my honest opinion is they've been disappointing, not in terms of the candidates' performance, but in terms of anything new being said that I didn't already know from the endless ads and the other kind of appearances that candidates get. It seems to me that televised debates now are almost redundant.
Yeah, yes, they are almost redundant. And I think you're right, Todd. You have, especially this last presidential debate, and I think you're right. I think we saw this certainly in the first presidential debate and in the vice presidential debate to a point. You essentially have candidates reciting their talking points, candidates not necessarily answering questions, candidates not engaging in the issues like we would like them to. And again, it seems to me that both candidates missed a great opportunity in the last debate to really engage and to be focused upon this economic issue. And it seemed to me that you had candidates who were miles and worlds and universes away from some of these everyday issues. The question came up, you may recall, about sacrifice and what kind of sacrifice would you ask of the people. And frankly, I don't think either candidate answered it very well. When there was an opportunity there to talk about sacrifice, John McCain could have certainly talked about his sacrifice when he was in the military, and then segue that into the sacrifice he would ask of Americans. And Obama could have followed the same course as well with what he would ask for in terms of sacrifice. And it seems both of these candidates, instead of interjecting something new and original and vibrant, they are going back to their talking points, which kind of, in a way, really defy some of the reality on the ground.
Politically, should Senator McCain have voted against the economic bailout?
That was one, in some circles, certainly, that was a popular notion. The bailout, some of the data that I've seen, especially based on congressional districts, when you look at Republican districts and Democratic districts, it was especially on McCain's side, the Republican, more conservative districts overall, who were somewhat leery of this bailout. And in that way, I guess him voting against it certainly would have demonstrated a break with Obama and also would have suggested support with the conservative base. But I think he's got to work more in the middle here, and he's a moderate, he's a maverick, and I guess I'm just kind of amazed that when you look at these two candidates, you can argue that McCain is a moderate Republican. You can argue that Obama is a liberal. I don't think he's an extreme liberal. I don't think he's a moderate liberal. I think he's a liberal, and we haven't seen that. And in part, that's because McCain is not distinguishing some of his views from Obama. For example, on that $700 billion, what did it end up being, $850 billion bailout vote. So, yeah, a vote against that would have certainly distinguished him from Obama, but I'm not sure politically, electorally, if it would have necessarily helped him significantly.
What are the biggest challenges in terms of electoral votes? And I'm talking here about the states that need to be won by the various candidates. What are the biggest challenges facing Senator McCain going into the presidential election right. and Senator Obama, respectively?
Yeah, Obama's in a very good situation right now. He has more money than McCain, so he's able to spend not only offensively, in other words, to spend in traditionally Republican states, to spend in Colorado, to spend in Ohio, Florida, those kind of, even Missouri, spend in those kind of states. So he's playing a lot of offense. The states that Kerry won, John Kerry won in 2004, it's pretty striking. All of those, according to almost every expert, are in the solid Democratic or kind of lock-solid Democratic category. And so those are all locked up. McCain has less money. He accepted the federal funding. And so he's just trying to kind of hold some of these states that I mentioned. Virginia, for example, a traditionally Republican state, clearly McCain needs to win that. Missouri, again, I think I saw Obama up by 2 or 3 points. That's a state that McCain has to win as well.
So, let's take a break right here. I want more on this because it really will come down to that final count that we'll all be watching on television of the Electoral College, the electoral votes state to state, and it'll come down to that last few states that will make all the difference for one candidate or another. So, folks, do you have any advice for the candidates in this presidential race? Give us a call. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Coming to you live this Wednesday, October the 15th. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesztc.org. 10 more minutes with Dr. Jeff Walz on the presidential election after this.
So what's the fad du jour at your church? Beth Moore, Rick Warren, post-emergent, pre-emergent, or some other move of the spirit that hasn't quite hit you yet? At the Brothers of John the Steadfast, we're kicking it old school. And by old school, I mean the 1580 Book of Concord. Check out our website for a list of confessional study groups, or if you have one at your congregation, you can let us know. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
What is it, Captain?
Whatever it is, it's incredibly advanced.
Hey, iPhone users, you can now listen to Issues Etc. live on your iPhone. Find out by going to piratechristianradio.com and click the iPhone link on the homepage. You no longer have to sit by your PC, laptop, or home radio to listen to Issues Etc. live. piratechristianradio.com and look for the iPhone icon.
With something much, much more. And it's going to change everything.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. John Rands, William Reeves, Pastor Michael Wenzel, Ellen Hooker, Nabil Neuer, Jay McQueen, Kathy Sandor, Kirby Wilbur, Heidi Marley, and Doris Purdy. Thanks for your support.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the sponsors section of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the presidential election. Dr. Jeff Walz is our guest. Coming up in about 10 minutes, hour two of Issues Etc., the entire hour devoted to a conversation on Christless Christianity. Yes, there is such a thing. And it seems to be the future of American Christianity. Christless Christianity, Dr. Mike Horton of the White Horse Inn will be our guest. This email comes from Daniel in Iowa City, Iowa. He says, I love politics, but I've become somewhat apathetic about my choice of candidates. I was enthused after the conventions and was looking toward a good presidential race, but I can barely watch anymore. It seems that both candidates either talk about problems or the other candidate more than they do about what they bring to the table and how they would help this great country. I am an enormously disappointed American. Americans deserve better. Your thoughts there on Daniel's email, Dr. Walls.
Yeah, I think Daniel makes excellent points. Coming out of those conventions, as he said, you had the Democratic convention in Colorado and Denver, you know, more than 80,000 people there for Barack Obama. And then you had the electrifying convention as well in the Twin Cities with McCain and Palin and just the energy that Palin brought to the ticket. So in a sense, yeah, I think we're all kind of excited by those launchings. And then now it's come down to this kind of negativity again. And you got a couple of things going on here. Generally, the candidates themselves, as we've seen publicly, will want to be fairly positive and not go too negative, but the problems tend to be the national committees, the Republican National Committee, the Democratic National Committee. They can spend some money on behalf of the candidates. The candidates can run some of their own ads, which, of course, at the end, you've got the little moniker that, you know, I'm John McCain or I'm Barack Obama and I endorse this. And then also you have these kind of third-party groups, 527 groups, who can spend on behalf of the candidates and who basically just try and trash the other party and the other candidates. So I don't think certainly the candidates are not blameless in this, both parties, both campaigns, but then you have these other factors, these other elements which have money or who have money that tend to be very negative, and this, of course, creates a very negative kind of dimension to it.
Has Governor Palin helped the ticket with the female voters, do you think?
Initially, yeah. Looking at some of the data, initially she did. Certainly she helped the ticket with Christian conservatives, with traditional conservatives, with women who have voted Republican in the past. But what's kind of happened here in the last little while is there was a hope that maybe Governor Palin could peel off some of those Hillary voters who were disenchanted, Hillary Clinton voters who weren't necessarily sold on Barack Obama. But a number of those women, kind of the moderate women we might call, are tending to lean now toward Obama and Biden and don't necessarily seem to be enraptured or enthralled with Palin anymore. So, yeah, I think initially quite a boost, quite a bump for McCain overall, but lately certainly not. Palin's not attracting the women voters, the moderate voters like the party or the ticket was hoping.
Back to the electoral map for just a second. At least one of the projections that I've seen has Barack Obama with either a safe state or states leaning toward him. He's exceeded the total number to win, and they have him estimated at 277 total electoral votes, and then John McCain somewhere at 174. I'm wondering, with the toss-ups in between, are there enough of the states that are leaning toward Barack Obama that could possibly go the other direction to lead someone to conclude that this isn't already a done deal?
Yes, certainly. McCain has a fairly narrow path toward the nomination. Certainly Obama and Biden are in command here. McCain, Palin would certainly have to win some of these traditional Republican states I was alluding to before. They'd have to certainly win Ohio, Florida, Missouri, Indiana, North Carolina. And, you know, Virginia is a state that has been Republican, that's tended to turn a little more Democratic, especially in the northern parts. And there's some question there, you know, how valid some of the projections are with Virginia. So that certainly could flip as well. So it's conceivable now that if things break for McCain, that he could just barely get over the 270 or get to 270 or 271. But again, he'd have to have a number of good things happen in a number of states simultaneously.
Regardless of the outcome of the presidential election, whoever occupies the White House will most likely face an economy that is deeply wounded and people whose confidence have been has been deeply, deeply shaken. What does the next president, regardless of who it may be, have to do, or can he do anything at all to restore people's confidence in our system of economics here?
Yeah, exactly, Todd. Yeah, it's that's going to be job number one. And as you say, it's much easier said than done. We've had this bailout bill we referred to. We've injected some money, talking about injecting money into banks, and so we're not exactly sure of the scope and magnitude of this. But regardless of that, yeah, you need a president who tries and instills confidence, instill a sense of hope and a sense of reassurance in our political system, and that will be a tall order, especially given just the limitations the new president will face economically. Our debt ceiling now, how much we can go into debt, is, I think, $11.3 trillion, and we're just about there with this bailout package as that rolls out. There have been estimates of budget deficits for this next year of anywhere between $500, $600, $700, $900 billion, just a one-year shortfall. So the juxtaposition is the president needs to instill this confidence in our system, and yet the system is very strapped economically. We've got entitlements, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security that need fixing, and so it's whoever it is, it's going to be, as you suggested, a very, very difficult path.
Does it look like the Democrats are poised to make some major gains in both houses of Congress?
Yes, it does. And we were talking about that a bit Monday night in a class that I team teach with Dr. Jim Berkey. Yeah, at this point, according to Rothenberg and others who are nonpartisan, the Democrats could pick up, say, 20, 25, maybe even 30 seats in the House, so they'd have an even, of course, bigger majority there. Certainly, they're going to pick up seats. The Democrats in the Senate could be 56, 57, 58, something like that. So one thing we talked about, will perhaps voters gravitate toward McCain because they don't want to see a united government under Democrats? And Americans tend to like divided government. We tend to like to see the parties kind of splitting up power. Although with the economic issues and everything else, we concluded, I guess, that we didn't think voters were that strategic. And in fact, it's possible you'll have a Democratic president with a healthy electoral college majority or mandate. You'll have a Senate that's almost at 60 votes, and that's the key number. When you get to 60, then procedurally, essentially, you can get things done in the Senate and then a healthy majority in the House. Just looking at the math, it does look like, again, things can change, but the Democrats right now are on track to, have a very good election and potentially to be under united government.
With only about 30 seconds here, kind of lost in the shuffle of all the talk of the economy, are the other issues that have mattered so much in presidential races before, marriage and the life issue, is that simply going to be set on the back burner by the American electorate for the time being until they figure out who's going to be in the White House and how the economy will be fixed, if possible? About 30 seconds.
It does seem that way, yeah. Back in 2004, there were a number of ballot initiatives on same-sex marriage, and that drew a lot of votes and a lot of interest. We don't have many of those this time. Abortion as an issue really has receded with everything else going on. And you haven't even heard too much about Supreme Court appointees and how that might affect these issues. So, yeah, economy seems to be trumping all at this point.
Dr. Jeff Walls is Associate Professor of Political Science at Concordia University, Wisconsin, co-author of the book Lutheran Pastors and Politics, Issues in the Public Square. Thanks for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be here.
Folks, we're going into the weekend. Well, at least we're at hump day, aren't we? And as you approach Sunday morning, be thinking about this. wouldn't it be nice to open up the church bulletin among all the other announcements that you see there? For you and for your fellow parishioners, find a blurb in there about Issues, etc., about the shows that have been on this week, and people can go and listen at our website, issuesetc.org, to all that on-demand audio. Well, it's possible. You can go to our website tonight, issuesetc.org, click promote, and you'll find that very Issues, etc., blurb for your church bulletin. You can take it to your church secretary or to your pastor and ask them to include it in the Sunday bulletin of your congregation. Issuesetc.org, click promote. When we come back from this break, we'll be talking with Dr. Mike Horton of the White Horse Inn about a Christless Christianity. He says, we're not exactly there yet, but we are sure headed toward it. And we'll find out what he means by Christless Christianity. Tomorrow on the program, a pastor's roundtable on the commandment, You Shall Not Kill. Our guests, Pastor Joel Baisley of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Dearborn, Michigan, Pastor Nathan Metter of Zion Lutheran Church in Staunton, Illinois, and Pastor David Boyce Clare of Faith Lutheran Church and Bethesda Lutheran Church in St. Louis. That's tomorrow, a pastor's roundtable on the commandment, You Shall Not Kill. When we come back, is it possible that we're headed toward a future of Christless Christianity, churches where Jesus' name may be mentioned, but his saving work and his cross aren't? We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.